Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
Alyssa kept reaching out to our sheriff over here because he was so adamant it didn't happen here because the car was found in Mississippi. And we kept trying to tell him it doesn't matter. That car seat was so far up, Roger couldn't have been driving. He didn't drive for the past 2 or 3 years. Finally, they called in an investigator, and he is working with both Mississippi and Alabama. And Mississippi has basically started over from scratch because they've got a new sheriff now and some new investigators and stuff. So they are trying.
I fully believe, and this is just me, that there's a lot more to the story than's been told. Honestly, I don't think we'll ever know. But by some miracle, something might happen, you know, and we might find out.
On March 10th, 2019, 49-year-old Roger Taylor disappeared. He was at his home in Vernon, Alabama, and according to his wife, he began acting out of character. For many years, Roger had been disabled after a stroke and several other serious health problems. He wasn't known to leave home often or drive due to his limited mobility. His wife said that he left that day in their car, headed across the state line into Monroe County, Mississippi. His plan was to go to the home of one of his daughters. Roger texted his daughter at 9:44 p.m., stating that he was lost and stuck. Roger's car was later found abandoned on a dead-end road in Monroe County, Mississippi. But despite extensive searches, no trace of him has ever been found. Since the day that Roger disappeared, suspicion has swirled around those who last saw him, and there's stories about what he was doing in the days leading up to his disappearance. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 254 of The Vanished, Roger Taylor's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. By the time Roger disappeared, he was at a tough place in his life. He had gone through multiple health emergencies over the years that left him with limited mobility, but things weren't always this way for Roger. We spoke with Roger's mom, Elaine, who was able to give us some background information about her son's life.
Roger was very quiet and shy, and he was a mama's boy. And he's just a normal little boy. He wasn't outgoing and stuff like that. And he didn't like school. He didn't work at going to school, making good grades. He just went because he had to go. And he liked the outdoors. He and his brothers, they'd go outside and be gone biggest part of the day riding bicycles and just exploring because we lived out in the rural part of the county on the gravel road, all the freedom they wanted. But he was a good kid growing up. Roger has one full sister and two half-brothers. Well, he and the one that was closest to him, half-brother, they were like cat and dog growing up. You know, they were always at each other's throats. They were about the same size, and he was protective of his sister, very protective of her. But all in all, they got along real good.
Elaine told us that when Roger grew up, he settled down with his high school sweetheart, Erlene.
After high school, he went to work. Then he wound up marrying his high school sweetheart. And her dad had a little one-man sawmill, and he taught Roger how to run the saw. And he basically ran the sawmill. He would cut, and then his wife, she would run the forklift and load. And then they grew apart and got a divorce. And that just kind of set him back. He had two daughters by her, and he loved his daughters. And he missed not being able, you know, to see them because his wife worked nights and he worked days. So he took care of them. At night, he'd go pick them up from the babysitter and take them home, give them baths, feed them something, put them to bed. Then his wife, you know, she'd come in from her night job. So he was a good family man. But after they busted up, he just kind of went the wrong way. He liked to drink his beer, and he drank more than he should.
After the breakdown of his first marriage, Roger became involved with his second wife, Kitty.
When he and his wife were separated, he met his second wife then while they were separated, and they had a daughter together. He and her had one daughter. He had had a son while he was running around after he got his divorce, and they raised him too up until he was, I think, 13. I'm going to tell the truth. He got on drugs. His wife, she was on them too.
We spoke to Roger's first wife, Earlene, and she explained the complex on-again, off-again relationship she had with Roger.
In high school, we were high school sweethearts. He was kind of quiet and shy until you got to know him, an all-around good person. We got married in 1990, and we had our first daughter, Ladair, in 91. And we did get divorced, but we stayed together. In between that, he got with Kitty, and she got pregnant. Me and Roger got back together, and we had Alyssa in August of 97. And we stayed together a few years after that, but from 2000 to 2001, we, you know, just left each other alone. He went his way and I went mine. We live in a small town, Vernon, and, you know, we'd see each other from time to time, but not a lot. We couldn't get along because, I mean, we loved each other, but we were absolutely two different people. We were divorced and our kids were pretty much grown, and we just didn't stay in contact with each other.
Roger's mom told us that his life continued to spiral.
I think after he got a divorce and he lost his home and his children, everything, you know, he just lost everything and he just didn't care. And he had always drank. His wife, his second wife, I think she played a big part in it because she was on drugs. So with the two of them together, they just kind of drifted down the wrong road, both of them. He got to where he didn't care if he worked. He just didn't care. And he told me, he said, I worked my butt off when I was married with his first wife. And I lost it all. And you know, I'm not going to do that again. You know, I'm just not going to do it. So the drug use got more and more.
We also had the opportunity to speak with one of Roger's daughters, Alyssa. And she explained her complicated relationship with her father.
My dad, we had a strained relationship because he had a very intimate history with drugs. So, but whenever he was clean, we talked a lot, and he was goofy, and he liked to cut up, but he was also the more sit back and like watch kind of type, and just pretty much all around a laid back man. He was very sarcastic, make a joke out of anything. You could never take him serious, and he would just sit there and clown on you and laugh at you. Just your typical dad making dad jokes. I mean, that just pretty much describes him. He was just really chill and just liked to have a good time and just hang around. He liked his chickens and his dogs, and he loved being outside. He was always outside in the woods, worked in the woods, hunting, fishing, all kind of stuff. He was addicted to drugs, unfortunately. So for most of my childhood, he wasn't really around. But whenever he was around, we'd play board games or we'd go riding back roads, old dirt roads, and he'd take us swimming. When I say us, I mean me and my siblings. But his drug of choice, to my knowledge, was meth. but he also smoked a lot of weed. I don't know how he got into using meth. He was smoking weed since he was 13 years old. And then, like, as he got older, he wanted to experiment. So he started doing, like, shrooms, and then he started smoking meth. And when he met my stepmother, she was addicted to meth, and she used needles. And she's the one that got him hooked on needles.
Years of drug abuse took their toll on Roger's health, and he ended up having one health crisis after another. Here's Elaine again.
He developed a stopped-up artery and had to have stents put in, and then he didn't take care of himself like he should, and the stent stopped up, and he had to have it replaced. Later on, in 15, he had to go into the hospital because he was having chest pains and passing out. He had stent stopped up and had to have another one replaced. And then they gave him blood thinner to keep the stent open, and he developed a brain bleed and had a stroke. He was taken to a larger city with a larger hospital. He stayed there in rehab, and that stroke and the brain bleed, it kindly altered his mind. He wasn't the same. He didn't talk a lot, and he didn't have any expressions when he would talk. His voice would be the same. He was just like a different person after that happened. And he and I were always real close. But after that, he was on so much medication, he still had problems. The stroke left his left side. He walked with a limp. He had, like, he didn't bend the knee. He kindly threw his leg from the hip out kindly sideways. And he could use his left hand and arm, but not like, you know, normal. And like I said, his mind wasn't all it should be, too. Then all the medicine he had to take and all the pain he was in, then he developed COPD.
Roger and his mom had a bit of a falling out, and it was after this time that his wife, Kitty, took over caring for his medical needs.
He got mad at me over nothing. His wife kindly took over then. You know, it was her responsibility to see that he went to the doctor, kept doctor's appointments and his medications refilled and everything. And he did that for a while, but I don't really know what happened because I would go down there. His wife would come out the door and meet me before I could even get out of the car and said, "Roger, sleep." I said, "Does he sleep all the time?" And she said, "Pretty much." I could call and she controlled the phone. So I had very little contact with him when she was there. But now when she was gone, he texted me and called me. It was after that he had to go back to the hospital because he was building up fluid around his heart because his heart had gotten damaged from the heart attack and he couldn't breathe. He was in the hospital again.
Since Elaine hadn't been allowed into the house to see Roger, she took the opportunity to go see him in the hospital, and the two worked through their previous argument.
So I went down there, and I visited with him a while, and I took him a breakfast sandwich. He came back home after that. You know, I had correspondence with him. But to be honest with you, I quit going down there because I never got in. I never got in the house. So I just quit going. My correspondence would be with him on the phone.
Roger's health continued to worsen, and by the end of 2018, just months before he disappeared, Roger was back in the hospital.
The end of 18, my nephew took him to the emergency room, and his right leg, his good leg, was swollen. He couldn't hardly walk, and his breathing was bad again. And he took him to the ER, and they said he had cellulitis, gave him some antibiotics. I called him, and I went down there. I knocked on the door, and his wife said, "Who is it?" And I said, it's Elaine. And she was mumbling something, and she came to the door. And he was sitting on the couch, and he didn't look good. His face had sunken in some, and he had grown a beard and let his hair grow. And I talked to him a little bit and asked him about his leg, and he showed it to me. I said, "Well, it's not too bad swollen, and his waist went down some. I got some antibiotics." And I asked his wife, I said, what the doctor say? "Oh, he just had cellulitis." I said, "Not giving any medication?" She said, "No, he just gave him some antibiotics and said, just keep on taking this medicine." I said, "Well, what's he taking now?" And she called off these maintenance medicines that he had been taking when he'd had his first stent and heart attack. I said, well, I think you need to make him an appointment with his heart doctor. I said, that may be something to do with his heart. And she said, oh, yeah, we got an appointment next week. I said, well, good. That's the last time I talked to him.
Alyssa told us that in the weeks before Roger's disappearance, he was supposed to attend her son's birthday party. But according to his wife, Kitty, he was too sick to make it.
In February, I had texted and invited him and my stepmom to my son's second birthday. And she told me they would be there. It was on the 24th of February. And, of course, they didn't show up, so it wasn't no big surprise. I didn't think nothing about it. And I had left it alone at that. And then sometime in February, he got his back time from his SSI check. I know it was at least $1,800 back time. And they had went shopping on the 24th because they were going to come to my son's birthday party, says my stepmother. But he wasn't feeling well. He could hardly breathe, so that's why they didn't come.
We asked Alyssa if she knew if her father was still using methamphetamine around the time of his disappearance. And she told us that he wasn't able to use drugs after all of his medical problems began several years prior.
According to them, and when I say them, I mean everybody that was hanging out with him, no, because he was not able to. Because in 2014, 2015, he had a massive stroke and a heart attack, I do believe, too. And he had bleeding on the brain. Like, he couldn't move half of his left side. He couldn't even smoke weed anymore.
According to those we spoke to, Roger and Kitty had a volatile relationship, and their arguments were often fueled by drug use. When Roger's health declined and he wasn't able to use drugs any longer, he wanted Kitty to stop too, but she continued using, which became a point of contention in their relationship.
Roger had a drug habit and a drinking problem, but now people say that he was clean because his health was so bad. But I know that Kitty, which is his wife now, is still on meth really bad.
Elaine also mentioned this when we spoke with her.
Roger was a burden for her. He had got to the point so sick that he couldn't do any drugs. He could barely live. And he told her that she wasn't doing any either. She's just burned up from doing drugs. And that's what she's doing to this day. She's still doing drugs. All her hair has fallen out. It was beginning to fall out 3 years ago, but now all her hair has fallen out from doing drugs and she wears weed.
The next thing that Alyssa heard about her father came on March 11th, 2019, when she got the call telling her that her father was missing.
On March 11th of 2019 is when my stepsister called me at 5:30 in the evening to tell me that my dad was missing. I immediately freaked out because I hadn't known my dad to like stray off from his house in years. So I immediately hung the phone up with her, with my stepsister, Tiffany, and I called her mother, Kitty, and I was asking her questions because she's a druggie too, so I couldn't really understand her. So I loaded my son up and I drove a mile and a half or a couple miles to their house, and I was talking to her and asking her what was going on, and she told me the story about what happened.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that.
Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Roger's wife, Kitty, proceeded to tell Alyssa a bizarre tale about what occurred on the day he disappeared. She said that they were at home, and Kitty and Roger's daughter, Tiffany, was there with her boyfriend, Dallas, and their friend, Eric. I want to make a note here that Tiffany also goes by her middle name, Brianne, and throughout this story, people will refer to her by both names.
Brianne and Kitty left to go to town to get something to eat. They were gone for a couple hours, and Kitty and Brianne came back, and they had some chicken, and my dad said that he didn't want no effing chicken and threw it on the floor, and then Brianne, Dallas, and Eric left.
According to Kitty, Roger, who we know was fragile and in poor health with limited mobility, seemed to take a violent turn.
And after they left, my dad got up out of his bed and picked a stick up, was trying to beat the crap out of Kitty, broke a window, so Kitty grabbed her purse, and she took out the door running. And she went to the left, and then my daddy took out of the driveway and went to the right. And she said she didn't know why he went to the right because he's seen her go to the left. So she ran to the neighbor's house and asked to borrow a phone so she could call Brianne to come pick her up. And she borrowed a phone, called Brianne to come pick her up, and then Brianne came and picked her up. And Kitty said that Brianne went back down to daddy's house and went inside to ask daddy what was going on. And he said that he was going to find Kitty, this, that, and another. That's exactly what she said, this, that, and another. And Brianne said, you know, Daddy, you're hurt. Well, Tiffany, her first name's Tiffany. We all call her Brianne. And Tiffany said, you know, Daddy, you're hurting my feelings. And he said, I don't give a fuck about your feelings. And then she said, I'll go find Mom. Stay here. I'll bring her back here. And he said, okay. So Tiffany took Kitty back to Gatlin, which is where she lived. And she was fixing to come back to check on Daddy when she got a text message saying, got lost on the way to your house. I'm in the hills. Send Dallas. Get Dallas help. I'll be hollering. I'm looking at a 48 on a tree. And then that's the last anybody's heard from him.
The story about Roger's behavior on the day he disappeared seemed strange to Alyssa.
When she told the story, it didn't add up because she told the story exactly how I just told it to you. Of course, you know, it's been over a year, so there's going to be some pieces that I've missed or I've forgotten. I mean, I can't, that's just factual. But the next day, she added to the fact that that Friday and Saturday, he was running up hills and climbing trees, and that's impossible. He couldn't run. He couldn't walk 100 yards without losing his breath. He couldn't even walk 10 yards without losing his breath, much less run. He could barely walk. He wobbled, and he had a left leg drag. I mean, there's just so many holes in this that makes no sense whatsoever.
But seeing as how since 2014, 2015, when he had those heart attacks and things, I've never seen him jump since then. I haven't seen him even move fast, so that doesn't even sound right. Before 2014, I could see him doing it, but after that, no. He just sat on the couch. He had trouble going out and walking his dog or feeding his chickens.
From the day that Alyssa found out that her dad was missing and she went over to his house to speak to Kitty, she has always felt like something was fishy about the story.
Kitty was acting like everything's fine. My daddy had been missing less than 24 hours at this point. I loaded her up. I had to force her to come with me. She did not want to come with me. She would not let me go in my daddy's bedroom, so I made her come with me. So we were driving around. She was talking, laughing, trying to play with my son, acting like nothing was wrong. I had to take my child to my mom's house because it was getting late and it was time for him to go to bed to drop him off. And when I came back outside to my car, she was sitting there
hysterically crying on the phone with somebody. And when I opened my car door, she closed the phone and quit crying, completely quit crying. If you were with somebody from 2005 to 2019 and they're missing, how are you going to hold your composure together for anything, first of all? Secondly, how are you going to go from hysterically crying, losing your mind, I mean, not and then everything, to just, it's gone, unless you're faking.
Roger's ex-wife and Alyssa's mom, Erlene, remembers Alyssa coming to her house with Roger's wife, Kitty, shortly after he disappeared.
Her and Kitty rode everywhere looking for her daddy, and then they showed up over here at my house, and Alyssa had to force Kitty to come in, and Kitty just, she was all over the place whenever I was questioning her and asking her about it, that he was missing. And Alyssa looked for him most of it, well, till about 1 o'clock that next morning.
The stories about Roger's final couple of days before his disappearance continue to evolve, with more details being added and changed.
My stepmother had told me later on, not during the original story, but the next day, I do believe, she told me on March 12th, when his car was found, earlier before it was found, she told me that she had gotten 10 Klonopins Saturday night because Daddy was having trouble sleeping. And this is after she told me about him running up the hill and climbing a tree and all this, that she had gotten 10 Klonopins and she gave him one to help him sleep. You don't give Klonopins to somebody that has heart problems, first of all. She gave him one, and about 15 minutes later, he said it's not working, that she gave him a Tylenol. So she gave him another one, so the total was now up to two. And he fell out of the bed. So she helped him up, and she gave him a third one. And that was her story the first go-round. And then she got asked about it again. It went up to four, because after he fell out of the bed the first time, he fell out of the bed again, and he was in the kitchen floor, had crawled to the kitchen floor, and she put him back in the bed and gave him another one. And then the third story she told is that she only gave him two, but when she woke up the next morning, which would be Sunday morning, she had the Klonopins in tinfoil on her side table in the living room because she couldn't sleep in the bed with him anymore. And when she woke up Sunday morning, he was laying in the floor and all the Klonopins were gone, insinuating that he took 10 Klonopins. So first of all, that could have OD'd him. Secondly, she had fentanyl patches that she was selling around the time that he went missing for $25 a piece. She had five. I know for a fact she sold one to a lady that Friday before he went missing for $25. So if she gave him a fentanyl patch as well as Klonopin, that could have killed him. I mean, there's a multiple thing. I don't think he was shot. I don't think he was stabbed. I think it was an OD, an intentional OD, and a body hide, because they were all high.
Alyssa mentioned that part of Kitty's story was that she had run to a neighbor to get help when Roger allegedly grabbed a stick and started swinging it around, breaking a window. We asked Alyssa if she has spoken to that neighbor and if that actually happened.
They said that they were outside and they seen Kitty walking. And when Kitty saw them watching her, she started running, saying that my dad was going crazy. She thinks that he was having an episode with bleeding on the brain, because he did have a brain bleed back in 2014, and they tried to get her to call the law. She would not call the law. She asked to borrow their phone to call Breanne, which is her daughter, and they let her use the phone, and then she left. Then Breanne said that they went back down there. Kitty said that they went back to Gatman, and then they both said they went back down there.
Roger's mom, Elaine, explained how she learned that her son had disappeared.
He came up missing on us. Supposedly on a Sunday afternoon. On Tuesday morning, my daughter that lives up next to Nashville, she called me at 6:30 in the morning. Well, that was too early for her to be calling. She said, Mama, do you know anything about Roger being missing? I said, no. She said, well, he's been missing since Sunday night. I said, how do you know? She said, I seen it on Facebook. I said, I don't know nothing about it. She said, well, I don't know nothing either other than he's been missing. I said, well, I said, why don't I find out and call you back? Well, about that time, my granddaughter, his wife and his daughter, she called me. And she said, Mama, I was wanting to tell you that Daddy's missing. I said, why are you just now calling me? Well, I was so upset, I just didn't think. And I got a little bit out of her how he came up missing. But no, his wife didn't call me. The daughter didn't call me on Tuesday morning. And he'd been missing since 5 o'clock Sunday afternoon. When the granddaughter called me, she gave me her mother's new phone number. I called her, his wife. And I said, where are you at? And she said, I'm on my way to Vernon with Mama. I said, will you stop by here? I need to talk to you. And she said, yes. So on her way back from town, she stopped by where I was at, and she and I talked.
Investigators learned that Roger's phone last pinged in the Greenwood Springs area, in the vicinity of Wise Gap and Grub Springs Road in Monroe County, Mississippi. Roger's car was found abandoned on March 12, 2019. It was on Blair Cemetery Road, which isn't far from the area where the phone was pinging, and is just a couple of miles across the state line into Mississippi. This is a dead-end road in a densely wooded area. Earlene told us more about the day the car was located.
Me and Alyssa were headed over to talk to the police, and I was actually on the phone with a police friend of mine here in Lamar County because Brianne kept giving Alyssa the runaround about her daddy, what she had heard and who was looking for him. So Alyssa called Monroe County, which is the county that the car was found in, and while she was on the phone with the dispatcher there, I was on the phone with a police friend of mine here in Lamar County, and I heard him ask her, and I heard that the car was on Blair Cemetery Road. So I had Alyssa turn around and go back, and there was two men sitting on a four-wheeler. When we pulled up at the road, Alyssa got out, and then they took her down there to where her daddy's car was, and then the police, Monroe County Police, showed up, and they searched and searched, and I stayed there till about 9 or 9:30 that night, and then I came on back home.
After Roger's car was located in the days after he had disappeared, Elaine noticed several odd things about the way it was found and what was around the car.
One thing that I went on was the seat to the car was pushed up real close to the steering wheel. There were no cigarette butts around the car, and he was an avid smoker. There was nothing there. I did see a couple of footprints, but you couldn't make anything out. And when his wife was sitting on my couch on that Tuesday morning, she told me that he was barefooted. I said, how do you know he was barefoot? Well, his feet was swollen. He couldn't get his shoes on. And she said, he'll build a fire. She said, he'll be okay. He'll build a fire. I said, okay. Sure enough, there was a pair of boots sitting in the mud in front of his car, and there was a little place over there on the side where someone had tried to burn, looked like a white cloth. But if he'd have burned a white cloth and got hit to go, and there was enough sticks and things that he could have built a fire. Just all that stuff that just don't seem right. She refused to go when they found the car. She refused to go to the car. I knew she didn't have any way of going, and I went to their house. I was in the driveway, and I called her, and I told her, I said, Kitty, that's her name. I said, I'm in your driveway. I said, they found Roger's car. She said, yeah, I know. I said, well, come on, go with me. No, I'm not going. I said, you're not going? She said, no. I said, why? Because I told the law if they find him, take him to the hospital. I said, but you're not understanding. I said, he may be in that car. And I said, your daughter's over there. She'll need you for support. No. She'd have to support me. I can't do it. I'm not going. I'm staying here. She refused to go. My thought was, she knew he wasn't in the car. That's what I thought. It's just so many things about the whole case that does not make sense. And she hasn't mourned. She blocked all of us. We couldn't call. She even put a sign up, no trespassing, on the land that I had given him, my father's homestead.
Alyssa, too, had her own suspicions about several things surrounding where the car was found and the items found with it.
She was adamant that when he went missing that he was barefooted.
Okay, my daddy is really tenderfoot. He is a flat-footed man. He never even walked around the house without socks on. So when she said that he went outside, left the house with no shoes on, that was an automatic red flag. She was so adamant that he was barefoot, so adamant. Well, when his vehicle was found, there was a pair of boots in front of it, and she changed it. She's like, no, I know he had those boots on. I know he had those boots on because I had to put them on with a shoehorn. They were lace-up boots, kind of like Timberlands, but they weren't Timberlands. And that was another flag because my daddy didn't wear lace-up boots. He wore like Georgia boots, pull-on boots, when he wore boots. The shoes I had seen him in since 2014 because he lost function of like the left side of his body. He never really regained it. I had seen him wear like Crocs and house shoes because he was a very independent, stubborn man, and he didn't like to have help. So he could put those on by himself. The boots were found right in front of the car, and the boots were crisscrossed. The left was where the right should be, and the right was where the left should be. And I just don't see him, first of all, wearing them, and second of all, being able to get them off, seeing as how he didn't have good balance because he had that limp in his left leg. There was no mud on the hood of the car showing that, like, he had been propped up against it. And my grandmother had a picture of, you could tell that mud was packed around the left foot, like, well, the left boot, like, you could see handprints in it, like, it was packed, put there.
On top of the shoe. It's not like it was stuck in the mud from wearing. The mud was packed on top of the shoe, which I tried to point out to the police officers anyways, because my daddy couldn't sit on the hood of a car and take his shoes off because he couldn't use his left hand for balance. He had to sit down and put his leg on his other one and pull them off with his right hand. I know that for a fact. And secondly, there was footprints around the car.
Alyssa explained that they had a tracker come out to examine these footprints out near the abandoned car.
He got a professional tracker to come in. That tracker started looking at the footprints, and he couldn't even determine which way my daddy would have went because the footprints just vanished out of thin air. They were some here, some there, not others here. They'd go to the left, go to the right, and they just disappeared. So we were going back, like, out of the road to see if he had walked back out. And at the power lines, he found some footprints, perfect footprints. So he had everybody stay away, and he was trying to determine which way they went. And he was like, these are too small to be a man's. These are a woman's or a child. And I'm talking about, this is like 4 or 5 miles out in the woods. Like, nobody's going to be out here. So you know it's directly related to the case. And he's like, these are either a woman's or a child's. And then Brianne, which is Kitty's daughter, said, those are my mama's. We came down here last night, and I couldn't get any farther in my car. She got out because she's always barefooted. Said she got out and she started hollering for daddy, and I told her just get in the car, we were going home. And I told the law, but that's a lie because Kitty was with me from 6:30 to like 1 o'clock Tuesday morning. She's lying, and they just dismissed me.
They look too small to be a man, which I pointed out to the police, but they're like, you know, it's been a couple of days. It's been 2 days. You know, it's rained, so they can distort the footprints a little bit. I'm like, okay, well, can you explain to me why there's a perfect left footprint indention, but there's no right one? For like 3 feet. I was like, he can't step that wide. I was like, and there's no boot prints anywhere around here. So they were like, well, you're right. My stepmother told exactly what was in the car. I have the car now, currently. I went and bought it from the tow shop back in September. They were looking through the car window, and they found needles in the back seat, like back floorboard. And they asked my stepsister, why would there be needles? And she told the police that my daddy was a diabetic, which is a lie. He was a drug user. So was my stepmother. So I told them the truth. I'm like, they're drug users. And flipped out. They were like, okay, well, my stepmother was not worried about my dad. Told the police to go home, that he would come out. He would come out of there as long as the police were not there. And he's been missing for over 48 hours at this point on March 12th.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Another strange thing happened before Roger's car was found. Alyssa had tried to search that area where the car was later recovered, but Roger's wife, Kitty, discouraged her from looking there.
The kicker is March 11th, me and her were on that same road because my stepsister lived on Red Hill Road in Gatman, Mississippi. She had me take her to her house where my daddy was supposedly heading. And then the next road, when you're coming back out on Wolf Road, you can even look it up on Google. When you're coming back out onto Wolf Road off of Red Hill Road is Easter Road. I went all down Easter Road, and Easter Road is a dead-end road. She had no problem with me doing that. I seen Blair Cemetery Road, and I was going to go down Blair Cemetery Road because I figured if my daddy was messed up like she said he was, this or another, he might have pulled into a graveyard. She threw 17 times of a fit and would not let me go down that road. And that is the road my daddy's car was on. It is less than a mile through the woods from where my daddy's car is, or was, to Breanne's house.
Alyssa was also interested in what looked to be a spot where a fire had been set near the car. She examined it further.
Kitty also said, don't worry, you know your daddy won't get cold because my daddy was very classic to build fires. She said, you know he'll build a fire, well, less than a foot from the car. There was a small fire that you could tell it was just lit and put out. Me being me, I looked to see what the fire was made out of, and it was a lot of strange papers and, like, different colored, kind of like you're burning something, like bills or something of the sort. And I looked in the car, and I didn't see anything that matched it.
On the subject of fires, Alyssa also got calls from various people about Kitty burning things for a period of time after Roger disappeared.
I do have pictures of Kitty. She was burning like for over 2 weeks straight after my daddy went missing. She was burning and burning, and people were calling me and telling me that she was burning. And she was burning, and they said that it stunk really, really bad on that road.
Roger's mom, Elaine, told us what she knows about the investigation into Roger's wife.
After all that, she never made any attempt. She didn't call Monroe County to find out what was going on. She didn't post anything on her Facebook page. All she did was block all of us and put a no trespassing sign up. But they went down there and talked to her. She has never been pulled in to law enforcement. They did get her when they opened up the investigation the second time and took her up to the jail. But on the first investigation, they never took her up there and did anything. And it wasn't maybe a month after Roger came up missing that Monroe County went over to his daughters and her boyfriends and busted them for drugs.
According to news reports, just 16 days after Roger's car was found, Tiffany, or Breanne, and her boyfriend Dallas, along with another man, were arrested for drug trafficking. During the drug raid, officers found a half pound of methamphetamine, along with ecstasy pills and marijuana, and a large amount of cash. There has been some suspicion around Roger's wife Kitty and their daughter Tiffany, or Breanne, and also the other people who were at the home on the day Roger disappeared, because of some of their misleading statements that have changed with time. Erlene told us her thoughts on that.
Kitty has not looked for her husband. Breanne has not looked for her daddy. Me and my daughter, Alyssa, are the ones that have looked for Roger, that have met with police in both states. My daughter was pregnant. Alyssa was pregnant at the time. And I have went to places and met with people that people don't want to meet with because they're dangerous people, trying to find out what I can find out. Because, I mean, he is my ex-husband. I don't have anything to gain from this. except giving my daughter peace about her daddy. She's his wife, and she didn't report him missing. Her daughter did in both states, but she slipped up when she reported to Alabama and said his last known location was Blair Cemetery Road. That's where the car was found. How does she know his last known location was Blair Cemetery Road? They believe she has something to do with it, but they've got to have, you know, some kind of evidence. Because if they pick her up without something, it won't stick.
Alyssa told us more about what she knows about the police investigation into her father's disappearance.
The police did their initial investigation at their home. And when I say they lived like hoarders, they lived like hoarders. It was like a normal trap house. There was power, but there was no water, nothing at this sort at my dad's house. They went and they talked to her there. They did a couple weeks ago. I pushed enough and I finally got them to get cadaver dogs and go search my daddy's property, and none of the dogs picked up on anything. They've questioned her three or four times. They did on March 14th of 2019 bring her into Monroe County in Aberdeen, Mississippi, and question her the same day they questioned me and they questioned Tiffany. And they questioned her, but somehow Kitty's statement got lost.
Alyssa has had her frustrations about how her father's case has been handled. Roger was last seen at his home in Alabama, so the authorities in Lamar County, Alabama, have investigated the case. The car was found in Monroe County, Mississippi, so there are two different jurisdictions in two different states working this case.
He's from Lamar County, Alabama, from Vernon. And he was last seen alive in Lamar County at his home. You have the Lamar County PD, which is our sheriff, is Hal Allred. Ahmad and a man named Dallas Burks is working his case over here in Alabama. And in Mississippi, because that's where his car was found, it is Monroe County Police Department. I have to brag on our sheriff. He finally got rid of the detective that was working it, that he brought in to work it, and got a better one, I do believe. Because he said, well, you know your dad's lifestyle. You didn't love your dad. Your stepmom's burned up. That's why she can't remember. I don't care. You don't tell five different stories in a two-day span, whether you're burned up or not. That's something traumatic. I mean, this woman can remember stuff that happened when I was little and tell me word for word what happened and where we went and who was all there. She's not that burned up if she can remember all that but can't remember what happened yesterday. Back in 2019, before Kevin Crook won the election, and Rodney Starlin was over my daddy's investigation. Rodney Starlin would talk to me. He would blow me off, this, that, and another. Cecil Cantrell would do the same thing to the point where they had my number blocked. I would have to download text maps and call them off them to get them to talk to me. They said they didn't know what else to do. They didn't know what the F else I wanted them to do. And I told them to find my daddy because his car was found on their state. And Rodney Starlin, he retired and dropped out of office on December 21st of 2019, before Kevin Crook became the acting sheriff in January of 2020. And he was supposed to leave his notes and everything on my daddy's case. Well, I went in right before he left because they were going to drag a pond on Wolf Road in Gatman because it had so been told that my daddy was in there. I had already told him back in May of 2019. That I've been told that he was in that pond, but he would not listen to me until he had four more people tell him. He showed me a very thick vanilla folder that had all kind of information about my daddy in it, and now the folder's missing.
Despite Elaine's suspicions about Kitty, she has been told that investigators don't suspect Roger's wife was involved in his disappearance.
They don't think she had anything to do with it because she loved him. I said, yes, she loved him enough that after Roger came up missing, I investigated on my own how many times he had been to the doctor. They set up an appointment with a cardiologist. She never took him to the appointment. I called the drug stores to see if there was a refill on prescriptions. And I called and I said, I was calling to see if Roger Taylor had a refill on any of his medication. I called the two drug stores in Lamar County that he used. And they said, oh, he hadn't had anything filled since. And it was over a year ago. And she had not been getting his maintenance medication. He had not been taking it for over a year. And I told the detective, I said, does that sound like a woman that loves her husband? She knows he's not capable of managing his medication. Does that sound like someone that loves their husband? They won't even get their medication refilled. I said, no, it doesn't to me, not in my book.
Elaine told us about one theory she has about what happened to Roger.
He was in such bad shape. She had been giving him pills at night for him to sleep. And she admitted to me that she gave him 3 Klonopin pills on that Saturday night because he could not go to sleep. He was in his bedroom, and he called and tell her, bring him another pill. She said she gave him 3. He finally went to sleep.
She fell asleep on the couch.
When she woke up that Sunday morning that he was laying in the kitchen floor, she said she got him up, got him on the couch, and asked him if he wanted to go back and lay down. And he told her no. And she put his clothes on him. What I think could have happened with that is she gave him too many, and the Klonopin, I've researched it, and my sister's an RN. I don't know what milligrams it was or anything, but he had a depressed immune system. He had a bad heart. He had COPD. He could have died from that, and when she woke up, she found him in the floor, passed away. She got scared because she had given him the pills. She called her daughter, and they plotted up how to get rid of his body. Either that happened, or on that Sunday afternoon, she said he went crazy, took a big stick, knocked some windows out, and she got scared that he was going to hit her, and she ran out of the house. That could be true, I don't know. But this also could have happened. He could have got worked up. Like she said, he got in the car and he drove off. It doesn't make any sense. The man hadn't drove in about 3 years. He did not drive. She done all the driving. When I would see them, she would be driving. And it doesn't make any sense to go from his house. Roger was raised and lived. He had lived his entire life with exception of 6 months in a 10-mile radius. He knew the roads. You know, like I said, we live in a rural area. He knew the roads. He knew how to get to his daughter's house. He didn't drive all that way and get within 2 miles of her house and make a wrong turn and go way down a logging road. I just don't believe that. I do not believe that happened. I do not.
There have been various theories about what happened to Roger. Many people believe that his wife had something to do with his disappearance, and that other people perhaps were involved in the cover-up. But what would have been her motive? Did Roger become too much of a burden to care for with all of his health problems? Was he given prescription medication that was obtained illegally, causing him to pass away, and those who supplied the drugs felt the need to cover it up? Some believe that there was a financial motive to make Roger disappear. While he didn't have much, he had some land, some money, and also more money due to come his way from a settlement he was going to receive from a pharmaceutical company for a medication he was given after his stroke.
If your dope partner got to the point where he couldn't do dope anymore, since he couldn't do it, he didn't want you to do it anymore, I mean, that would be kind of a drag. She got his land, which was in her name, their daughter's name, and her mama's name. My daddy signed that over to them in 2015, I do believe, after his stroke and stuff. Also, he got his back time SSI back in February. He was supposed to have withdrawn $1,800 and had it on him in cash. And he had taken some kind of heart medicine after his stroke and such. They had a recall on it, and he put out to get the lawsuit going on it. And he won. He was supposed to be getting money back on it.
We had the opportunity to speak with an investigator from one of the jurisdictions who have looked into Roger's disappearance. We spoke to Captain Wayne Wilbanks from the Monroe County Sheriff's Department.
Captain Wayne Wilbanks, over investigations at Monroe County Sheriff's Department. I've been with the Sheriff's Department since 2009. I got in law enforcement because I wanted to make a difference in our community.
Captain Wilbanks told us about what they have done to search for Roger.
Back in, I believe it was March 2019, we got a missing persons report from a daughter, Tiffany Taylor, who stated that her dad lived in Vernon, Alabama, and was on his way to see her in Monroe County and left a message on her phone stating that he was lost, didn't know where he was at, and needed her to come get him. She rides the roads between our county and Lamar County, Alabama. No luck in locating her dad. She has Lamar County Sheriff's Department ping his phone, which shows it pinging in a rural area just across the Mississippi state line. They end up locating the vehicle on Blair Cemetery Road, which is a dead-end road that leads off into a hunting area. The investigator that actually worked it, he contacted our search and rescue. Search and rescue did grid searches, pattern searches. If I'm not mistaken, they flew drones, pretty much exhausted every resource that they had. We was not able to locate him or any signs of him being still in that area. Kind of had a jurisdictional question, I guess you would say, with him being actually a resident of Vernon, Alabama, and his vehicle being here. So we ended up having to work both sides of the state line. Case ran cold. A Dallas Burke, who was a retired deputy in Alabama, he gets with Lamar County. Lamar County asks him to look into cold cases. This is the first cold case he gets. He comes to us wanting to kind of know where we was at with the case. Now, we're talking roughly a year after Roger was first reported missing. We pull our files together, start back from his original place of residence, which was in Vernon, Alabama. We ran cadaver dogs on his property, no hits on that area. We come back to the area where his vehicle was located, which was on Blair Cemetery Road in Monroe County. We rewalked the area, went to the residence that his daughter was staying at the time, did a search of that property. Every once in a while, we will get an anonymous tip that they heard so-and-so about. We have chased down every lead that we have had and have come up with absolutely zero. And we are stuck between a rock and a hard place, I guess you'd say. Roger had a stroke a few years back, and if I'm not mistaken, is the left side is paralyzed, and he drug his left foot. He had heart conditions. He was a known drug user in the past. The daughter, Alyssa Taylor, has every bit of information that she gets through social media, phone calls, text. She directs right back to us for us to check out. Both sides of the family have been extremely helpful with any tips that they get that we're not getting. We've polygraphed a few people. We've had tips come in that a certain individual may have done something to Roger, hit him with a car, different type of things, and we've ran every one of them leads back down. So we're kind of stuck, I guess you'd say, because we're trying to work it as somebody that actually may have just disappeared, and also looking at it as something may have happened to this person as far as criminally.
At the end of our call, Captain Wilbanks told us how anyone can contact them if they have information about what happened to Roger.
So if there's any tips, we could definitely use them to track down. They can contact the Monroe County Sheriff's Department at 662-369-2468, or they can contact Golden Triangle Crime Stoppers, where they will remain anonymous. And Crime Stoppers actually has a app now called P3, the letter P, number 3, that you can sign up for and do completely anonymous online.
So what happened to Roger Taylor back in March of 2019? We know that Roger wasn't in good health and struggled to get around. Because of this, he rarely left home. According to his wife, he began acting strangely, running up hills and climbing trees. And she said that later he attacked her with a stick. But she also has stories about giving him Klonopin to help him sleep. And Klonopin is a benzodiazepine that can cause severe drowsiness along with other things like slowed breathing. Neither Roger nor Kitty had a prescription for this medication, and it was obtained illegally. At times, she has claimed to have given him different amounts of this drug, and she said she later found him on the kitchen floor. Considering Roger's many health problems, this medication could have had devastating side effects for him, especially at a higher dose. Kitty claims that Roger grabbed a stick and started swinging it around and broke a window, causing her to flee for her own safety. Then she said Roger left with the car, headed to his daughter Tiffany or Brianne's house over in Mississippi, and he texted her saying that he was lost. The strange thing about all of these stories is that others don't believe Roger was physically capable of what Kitty said he did that day. It doesn't quite add up to those who knew him. Unfortunately, we weren't able to reach Kitty to get her side of this story. Did Roger's wife have a motive to make him disappear? Could his disappearance have been a cover-up of some kind of accident? Or did Roger simply disappear into the woods that day and searchers haven't found him? How far could Roger have gotten on his own? If you have any information about the disappearance of Roger Taylor, you're asked to call the Monroe County Sheriff's Department at 662-369-2468.
See, I personally don't think what his wife told is the truth, but we have no way of knowing because he's gone.
I'm not saying she did it. I'm saying she knows what happened. I was like, there's no way that she doesn't because he never left home.
I mean, I'm just hoping that getting this out there because we're never going to give up. We know that he's gone. We've known that for a long time. And we just want what everybody rightfully deserves, to lay him to rest, you know, a place that my daughter can go and put flowers on her daddy.
That brings us to the end of episode 254. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Texas. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels. A symphony of just 3 simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of 2 young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When 2 of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but 2 trials that ended in hung juries, and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.